Hey everyone, this is Sherry Reichert-Ballou with Simply Celebrate, and I am very honored and delighted today to be joined by Anne McGivern. Anne, are you there on the line?
Yes, I am. Hello, Sherry.
Hello, Ms. Anne. And I have to preface this conversation by saying that Anne and I have never met. Anne is a dear, dear friend of a dear friend of mine, Suki. And Suki suggested that I get on a call with Anne, and I was just saying to Anne, I love Suki so much, and I know that everybody in her life is amazing. And so I said yes, and Anne, bless her heart, did the same thing.
It's a world in which saying yes is a wonderful thing.
And here's the really important thing to know about Anne, although there's going to be many more really important things that we get to learn about her, which I'm so excited. Anne has terminal cancer. And Anne, the one thing that Suki did share with me that opened my heart so much to who you are and to how I just, you know, without even knowing anything more to how you live your life, is that she told me about a party she attended recently. Do you know the party I'm talking about?
Oh, I believe I do.
So could we start there? Could you tell us about that party?
Oh, of course. It was June 9th of this year, which is 2019. And I repeated an event I've had many times, two or three times a year. Some friends of mine get together and we have a little old-fashioned musical hoot nanny. And
I love that.
I decided that it was time to do that again. And this time, I decided to do a great freebie giveaway of all kinds of things in my house that are going to go away when I go away. So I set up my garage like a free garage sale. And
wow.
We had everybody who came filled out two name tags. And we picked names out of the bowl. And when it was your name came up, you got to go shopping in the garage and pick anything you wanted by putting your second name tag on that item. And I had very specific instructions for people that they were not allowed to bring anything back into the house or they would lose it. And my reason for that was I didn't want to have a lot of conversation about what's the history, where did it come from, oh, I love this, and have other people say, oh, I want that. I just wanted it to be sort of a simple thing with my illness not being the focus, but also just sort of have fun that people got free giveaways.
Oh, Anne. So I am just so moved and touched and inspired by this that, first of all, I love that you had these, what you were calling musical hoot nannies. I mean, that just speaks so much about who you are and the joy that I'm sure you've brought to so many with those. So did you also then, was this billed as a hoot nanny too?
Oh, yes. I mean, I invited everybody with a hoot nanny. And with the exception of me, there were probably 30 people here, and probably four or five of them knew what I was doing about the giveaways because they had actually come to my house and helped me sort through things and set up the garage and all of that kind of stuff. So I invited people to a barbecue and a hoot nanny. And we had a great barbecue, and everybody had fun and good food. And then we started the music, and then I sort of announced to people what we were doing.
Wow.
It was just really kind of fun, and people loved some stuff. I mean, they just, you know, everything that went from a big garden basket to an old antique safe and, you know, a Chinese rosewood chair and, you know, silly things like, you know, a curl-up hose and a circular saw. You just never know what somebody else is going to want. So people went away with some kind of stuff they wanted.
And Anne, what was it like for you while this was all happening?
Well, I was singing and playing my guitar. I was at the hoot nanny. I was just having a blast singing and playing. And, you know, the way it worked was whoever's name got drawn, they went out and did their shopping. And then they came back and they picked another name. So it didn't interrupt the hoot nanny at all. I didn't have to manage it.
Is this just like...
We just sang and, you know, clapped and danced, and people brought instruments, and we mostly had a great sing-along for a couple of hours while people were shopping.
Wow. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but to me, what you're saying is really extraordinary. I mean, does everybody tell you that you're extraordinary?
No. But a few people have, but I don't really believe them.
Well, let me tell you what's striking me so much. I mean, first of all, just again, the general spirit of community and play that I'm hearing that you've fostered for a long time. But then to be in the place where you are with the terminal illness and want to continue that is so beautiful. And on top of that, though, to have this amazingly generous idea about how you wanted to gift people so that the things that you've loved would go into loving hands. That you had the thought to do that, I think is extraordinary.
Well, thank you. It just seemed to me that there was no point in having somebody come and do what they call an estate sale. And it just seemed like a lovely way to keep me in their lives. So I guess there's some kind of selfishness in it, in that, you know, I want it to be remembered, but I also wanted people to take a piece of me that they love. And and there was a real joy in my knowing, oh, Sandy got that beautiful painting, and Judy took my guitar. And there was just something really beautiful for me in that, knowing that it was just the full circle of the giving and the receiving.
Wow. And the thing that I'm projecting, Anne, is that for the people who were there, obviously people who so love you and know you deeply, that because of the way that you did this, and my projection is that each of those gifts that you gave them are also imbued with this beautiful hootenanny spirit of life, that, like, life-affirming.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too, which feels to me so completely different than even if you had decided you were going to earmark certain things for people. They wouldn't have had that, I don't know, there's something I can't even articulate it. I don't know if there's anything about it that you want to say that you consciously thought about, but it feels very different to me.
Well, I don't know. The giveaway thing was a lot of fun, but from the beginning of this, Sherry, when I was diagnosed on, I'm not kidding, April Fool's Day, there's some irony in that, isn't it, to be diagnosed with terminal cancer on April Fool's Day?
Wow.
I mean, it is sort of like the great karmic joke. But ever since that day, I've been completely self-disclosing about my diagnosis, and part of my reason for doing that is that I really don't want to participate in our social conspiracy of silence around illness and death.
Mm.
So from the very beginning, I would just say to people, yes, this is really the truth, this is what's going on, and, you know, to the extent that I can, I'll tell you the truth. And what that does for me is it creates a sense of intimacy, which I think we all crave and need and want. And it also does sort of break that silence that we seem so culturally attached to. And in my opinion, it's just all the same thing, the life and the death. I mean, that's just really, this is just the other side of it. And while it's not exactly the April Fool's joke I would have asked for, it is the one I got, and it's my job to sort of do the best I can with it.
Wow. Anne, was this just this past April Fool's Day?
Yes.
Wow, so this is only April, May, June, so for 3 months.
That's correct.
And have you always had this beautiful, I mean, to me, what feels like this beautiful honesty, and like you're saying, that leads to intimacy, which I'm sure is partly why Suki wanted me to meet you, because I have such reverence and just such respect for that. Have you always had this, or did it come when the diagnosis came?
No, it did not come with this diagnosis. I probably began to develop this in my middle 30s, when I sort of woke up to the fact that I was responsible for my own life and got a bit of a spiritual life and made some changes in my behavior when I realized that they were not very helpful to friendship or intimacy or love. Like, you know, I grew up. And it's been, you know, since then, now I'm 68. So, you know, it's been a 32, 33-year journey about how to be authentic and intimate and genuine and playful and foolish and silly and honest. All of those things, you know. But I did not start out that way. Maybe we all start out that way our first 60 days, and then we kind of have to return to it 30, 40, 50 years later.
Oh, Anne, I love that. What a beautiful thought, right? That, you know, I do feel like perhaps we start out that way. You're right. But, and how beautiful that it sounds like it was a very intentional, conscious path for you in your 30s.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I woke up to the reality that I need to make some changes. And I was very blessed by the ability to do that and really good people that helped me and mentored me and guided me and held my hand and pointed me in better directions.
Wow. There's so many questions. I'm pausing, Anne, because there's about 1,000 questions I could ask you right now. There's so many things I want to know. Let me ask you Maybe this is the place. Yes, what?
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what do you think is most important for you to say right now around, like, what you said I think is huge about our culture and that for you it's really important to break the silence. Is there more that you want to say around that? Because that feels really important.
Well, oh my goodness, I could say a lot or a little. What comes to mind is I'm a lesbian, and I survived the AIDS crisis like so many of my brothers and sisters, but I also watched many, 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 many people die, and I've been blessed in my life to be with people, probably over a dozen people at their death. And the spiritual experience of being with other people when they died gave me real insight into what death was, that it was not scary. And that it was only scary to the people who really didn't grasp a sort of holistic view of life. And so that's part of it. The other part of it is that the conspiracy of silence around AIDS and the ignorance and the fear and the propaganda and the isolation that people felt and the discrimination against people absolutely horrified me. I saw people so discriminated against in the medical world, in the social world, and I was pretty convinced that it was almost all based on ignorance, and the ignorance wasn't really people's fault. The ignorance was our whole culture that doesn't know how to ask questions, doesn't know how to let people in to the truth, doesn't really want to look at the truth, doesn't want to integrate that into their whole view of what we are as a society. So I think that had an enormous impact on me, Sherry, that the conspiracy of silence that I witnessed and personally experienced during the AIDS crisis changed everything for me. And then later, 20 years ago, actually, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I I was so aware that people had no idea what to say to me, what to do with me. I remember one woman saying to me, "Well, you know, I guess God gave you this so 'cause there's something to learn from it." And I remember this wasn't my most graceful answer, but it was my most truthful response to her. I said, "Well, Alexis, I don't know about you, but I do not have the kind of God who decided to whip a little cancer on me to teach me a lesson."
Mm.
You know, that's such a common thing in our culture that we don't know what to say. I think she said something that had been said in her presence, and because she was awkward. She didn't really know what to do. I don't think she meant anything harmful in it. She just was ignorant about what to say. And so that experience of dealing with cancer for the next year really convinced me to just tell people the truth. I went around with a bald head. I didn't cover up. I didn't pretend. And what I realized was that the more open I was about having cancer was very much like being open about being a lesbian, that it brings people into our hearts and our lives in a way that creates an intimacy that we can't have without that kind of disclosure. It's just not possible if we're keeping parts secret.
Wow. Oh, my goodness, Anne. Wow. It's rather breathtaking, isn't it? Not just what you just shared, but that that you're able to gift whoever's around you. I mean, I'm just really now getting the full impact, and I get to be included in this by some grace. I don't know how, but it's so true what you're saying, that when people don't know what to say, which it is true. I think you're absolutely right, because that's just the way our culture, like you said, there's this silence. But that what you're doing by just simply sharing, like you said, in the same way you would share that you're a lesbian, or the same way you might share your music or anything else about you,
that
it's an invitation, I feel. It's an invitation for us, like you said, to come closer and to be real. And oh my goodness, is there anything that our culture needs more than that, right?
Well, I think we need a lot of it. And, you know, I heard this definition, it's not original, but I heard this definition of intimacy probably 30 years ago. And the definition that I heard and embraced was, "Into me, you see."
Oh.
And I realized then how it was so different from everything that I had thought to that point, which was, I can come into you, you know, I can come after you with questions or, you know, whatever. But what I'm really doing in that experience is asking other people to reveal themselves. But if I really want to be intimate with people, I have to reveal myself. And the chances are pretty darn good that if I reveal myself, a reveal from the other person will be the follow-up. And that is that circle of intimacy that I craved and that I think everybody craves. And so that has been pretty much a moving force in my life, whether it's cancer or music or cooking or being silly and stupid. I mean, it's just like, let me show you who I am. And maybe I'll be gifted with your revelations as well.
Ah, yes. Yes. And I can't help but think that the other thing that follows is that when we really do share on that level, and again, I don't even think it matters what it's about. I don't think it matters if it's, you know, something silly or something, you know, quote unquote serious or whatever, but that it's like that I can't help but to think that it would help us drop our fears of the other, which somehow in our culture, there's so much of that where people are just afraid. They're afraid if people are different. They're afraid if people's lifestyles are different. And I just can't help but think that what you're saying, it just feels like it's it's part of the healing of all of that.
Well, I guess it could heal some things, but if I don't think in terms of healing any kind of injuries, if I just think about being really alive, it feels more like that to me. I mean, I think the side effect is that some of the old wounds do get healed, but really and truly what the gift for me has been about how to just be truly alive. Like, what does this really mean to be alive? And, you know, does it mean just like dance? You know, they all sing about dance like nobody's watching. Well, maybe it does mean that. And I think what gets in our way is what you said a minute ago about fear. I think we are so terribly afraid. And we're so afraid of exposure because we have this baggage or cultural stuff that says we're not good enough, we're too short, we're too fat, we're queer, you know, we're old, you know, whatever. We're so afraid that we take on this protective armor, and that the protective armor just keeps us from getting exactly what we want.
Ah, wow. Right.
So I don't have any armor anymore. It's wonderful to be free of armor.
Wow, Anne. And so the way that you're speaking right now, I just feel like there's such this beautiful sense of, yeah, just that, like you've put the armor down. Do you feel like, is this how it is for you, you know, all the time right now, or do you still sometimes need to put it back on?
Well, of course I put it back on because it's situational, you know, like everybody else in the world, there are people I don't quite trust. But that's usually based on an experience. You know, there's those people that you see across the room that you've never met and you just don't like them and you don't know why.
Right.
I mean, you don't know why. You can't tell anybody, but you just know you don't like them. So, of course, my armor goes on in those situations. You know, when people have violated my trust or something, then, of course, my armor goes up again. But I don't think it's useless to have armor. I just think it's useless to have armor without a reason.
Aha. I just thought of something I really want to ask you, because I loved when you said it's really about being alive. And I realized that I think that's the thing that, again, back to feeling like, oh, Anne, this is extraordinary. This is what I want for everybody, which is, how is it that you are allowing yourself, and what does it feel like, or what does it look like to be so fully alive while you have terminal cancer?
Oh, what a very interesting question. Huh. Well, I don't know how else to be except alive. I it's not really an effort. It's just, I've had a lot of practice doing this now for a lot of years. I wouldn't know how to stop. And yes, I know it's going to stop. It's probably going to stop within a couple of months. And when it stops, it stops. But I can't really imagine sort of an untimely death, no pun intended. I can't imagine an untimely death to my life spirit before my body goes.
Oh. Right.
Why would I kill myself? I mean, the real self that's myself. Why would I kill that? Because my body's going to die. I wouldn't even know how to do that. But the idea of it just seems ludicrous.
So, but what I'm hearing that feels really, really essential is, you said, I've had a lot of practice being really alive. So wasn't that you waited until you got this diagnosis and then you thought, oh, I better start being open and alive and playing music and living the life I'd always wanted. It sounds to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you started practicing a long time ago.
Yes.
Being Anne.
Yes. You got it.
And that.
This is not new.
Yes.
It's not. It's quite old. I've been living this way longer than I was before I found this. So I've been living this way pretty much since I was 35 years old. So it's just it's the same old for me. It's nothing new. It's nothing different. And I guess the blessing of that, truthfully, Sherry, is that I have wonderful people in my life that I didn't have before I was 35. I was kind of angry and arrogant and very guarded and very afraid. So as a result of all of those things, you know, I was lonesome and isolated and very, very unhappy.
Oh, Anne, so, I'm so glad that everything turned the way it did, or you turned the way you did. Really.
I mean, miracles happen. I'm one of them. I got to change the path that my life was headed for. I got to really be alive.
And here's the thing that, again, that I'm seeing. So it's like, first of all, you made that choice and did, you know, I'm sure everything it took, like you said, on your spiritual path and other paths that you took to be as alive as you could, to be open, to live your life honestly and intimately. But then you also didn't change anything when you got the diagnosis, which I'm guessing that for some people, I mean, I don't know, I've never gone through this, but that it might be a time where some people might shut down. But you, like you said, why would I do that?
I wouldn't know how, Sherry. That's really the truth. I wouldn't know how. I wouldn't have a good reason for it, number one. But number two, I wouldn't know how. Even if I decided that was a good idea, I kind of wouldn't know how.
I love that. It's just...
How about being myself? You know what I mean?
I'm just sitting here smiling because I just think, I mean, there's all sorts of wonderful things that we get to experience while we're alive on Earth. But what you're describing of that place of intentionally and consciously being alive in the way, whatever it means to you, you know, and expressing that as long as you possibly can, you know?
Yes. Yes.
That just, wow.
And that's life. And like everything else, it will end.
But that until it does, here you are.
Until it does, here I am.
I mean, that's what I'm getting. Like, holy, completely playing music with your humor, with the, you know, things you love, people you love.
Yep.
And I guess, Anne, the thing is that I'm kind of maybe guessing part of the reason Suki wanted me to talk to you is that for me, one of the saddest things in life is when people go their whole lives and they don't let themselves have that place of what you're describing, which is being fully who they are, that they're still, you know, they're still answering to what society says or their parents told them or their friends want for them.
They're still afraid. Yeah.
And with I really suspect...
With good reason. People don't become afraid without a reason. So, you know, I have great compassion for that amount of fear. People do not become afraid without a good reason. Whether it's the third-grade teacher or the bad husband or, you know, the first partner who walked out on you or... I mean, people are not afraid without a reason.
Yeah. Do you have any, you know, any tips or ideas that come to mind about, like, what do people do with that? Because like you said, there's a good reason.
Oh, geez, I don't know. I guess tell yourself the real truth about what the reason is and ask yourself if that's reason enough to kill yourself, whether it's physically or spiritually. I mean, I think it's really about telling ourselves our own truth. What is it I'm afraid of, and how did I get here, and how much of it runs my life, and what does it look like when it leaves my body and encounters the rest of the world? Does it look like I'm, you know, arrogant or nasty or isolated or sarcastic, or, you know, does it look like I'm withdrawn and waiting for people to take care of me? What does it look like? And if people can tell themselves the truth about that, I think they can have a beginning to saying, well, I could change that one thing, or I could change that second thing, and maybe it ends up to being 10 things. I don't know if that's it. I don't know if it's it, but I think it's got it has to start with telling ourselves the truth. And sometimes we can't tell ourselves the truth, and it comes from somebody else who says, you're such a know-it-all, or you're so sarcastic. And of course, we all respond defensively, but it might be worth taking, you know, 10 seconds to say, wonder if that's true.
Yeah, and it can even be when someone's saying to us, you're so beautiful, or you're so, you know, something, you're so generous, and someone says, no, I'm not, and they're not,
right.
They're also not living the truth of that.
Exactly. Yes, I think that's a really good point, because we want so much to be seen because we need that. And then when people see us being generous or kind or fun, then we like freak out and tell them, no, what you're seeing isn't really true.
That's so true.
I mean,
you know, and
crazy.
It is. And I'm so sad because I just realized we only have a few minutes left, and I could talk to you for about 14 more hours because this is so important.
You got an appointment, and actually so do I. So what's the best way for you to wrap this up, Sherry?
I know. First of all, just by saying that, just to acknowledge that you have I just love this. This is such an important conversation. And in a way, here's the other thing, is that I love that. This is the first time we've spoken, and yet I feel all of this. It's not that you're just that you're giving voice to this, but I can tell this is how you live. And I think it's really my belief that oftentimes that speaks more than anything. And so perhaps in a way, we don't even have to wrap it up.
Okay.
Because you know what I mean?
Good point.
Go ahead, Anne.
Well, sometimes it's just like, okay, you're finished. We did that.
Well, and sometimes, you know, maybe this is it. Like sometimes the time is up and there's still so much more that we'd like to do and say. And yet, for me, I just loved this time with you. I love the conversation. I think what you said, the last point you made about are we telling ourselves the truth? It's so huge. Maybe that's just the thing to leave people with, because we all have some place to look.
Yeah. And there's beautiful discoveries to be made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for this time, taking your precious time to do this. I've enjoyed it so much.
Oh, me too, Anne. It's just been an absolute delight to connect with you and to get to be a part of your being alive is absolutely a gift. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a gift to me, too. Pass it on.
Yes, pass it on. Anybody listening, pass that on. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, my dear. Thank you. You take care of yourself now.
You too. Bye-bye, Anne.
Bye-bye.